Good evening, and it's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on the West Coast. Welcome to HBM Revisited, and we are working our way through the book called The Human Biological Machine as a Transformational Apparatus by E.J. Gold.
New edition and old edition?
Here's the new edition and here's the older edition. We're doing a technique that I call slow reading. We're reading it slow enough that even I can get it. Okay, maybe not that slow. However, we're reading it for understanding, and we're going through it a bit at a time, and that I encourage everyone to speak up. Any question you have is a question that I have. It's a question we've all had as we go along. I also want to direct your attention to the website. The website is wingsofchaos.com/HBM. And there's been a spurt of activity in the last few days on both chapters 11, which we covered last week, called Repair of the Machine. And now there's even a couple of comments on chapter 12, which is what we're going to cover tonight. So, without further ado, I'd like to jump in.
Did you have a chance to post exercises? I didn't get
yes.
on there. Okay,
yes.
So there's some exercises there, too.
On many of the chapters, you're going to see a very brief introduction to the chapter, along with the chapter header. And if you hold your cursor over that chapter to the right, you're going to see the exercises. Now, the exercises are 3, 4, or 5 questions that I've come up with in my reading that will help you as you read through it to focus on different areas that are important in the chapter.
Mm.
They're pretty potent. They're challenging. Now, why do I put them up there? Part of the reason I put them up there is to help invigorate our thinking about the chapter, but they're key questions that if you answer, and then others even respond to that answer, it helps others when they come along.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them a clue as to what the path is through this chapter. So take a look at that from time to time, particularly if you have responses to the recordings that are up there, it would be very helpful. So that's wingsofchaos.com/HBM.
That's all lowercase, right?
Doesn't matter on a web address.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah. At least, I don't think so. It's all one word. Wings of Chaos.
Wings of Chaos.
And that Wings of Chaos is a website I've had for a very long time, because we ride and we spend our lives on and about chaos. And so it's like riding the wings of chaos.
Ah.
So
somebody asked me where you came up with that name, so now I'll have something to tell them.
I've had it a long, long time. So tonight we're on chapter 12, and anybody that's on the phone that's also reading the log, I would appreciate it. Mike, I don't know if you want to take that job on again.
I can, but if there's anybody else on the line to help me, that'll be great.
Okay, so
is there anybody else here?
Yeah, I am, but I don't feel like ready, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Moses, that's okay. But
oh, fine, sure. Okay, I'll just try to, I'll read it, no problem.
Okay, keep your eye on
Thank
both,
you.
And if you see something that you think needs to be shared for the recording, because we're recording this in an audio version as well, then go ahead and read that, and let's pose the question, and we'll take it up here as well. But to get us started, M.A., are you? Can
yes.
you help us on that then?
I can.
Okay, so chapter 12. Let's see what we get into here.
Chapter 12, The Essential Self as an Electrical Field. Information in the evolutionary sense is transmitted by impingement of one electrical field upon another. The electrical field of the essential self undergoes the exact change necessary to free it from the compulsive electrical affinity for the human biological machine.
let's orient ourselves a little bit, okay? We are on chapter 12 now, called The Essential Self as an Electrical Field. Two chapters previously were on chapter 10, and that was called, do we recall, it was The Machine as an Electrical Field. Now, when I wrote about that on the website there, I said one of the comments I made is this is the second pillar that has been posited, in a sense, by the author for us to move forward. This is the second column in this process of understanding this evolutionary methodology. Mm-hmm. And it's unique. It's unique. Yes, it does a lot of it. Some of it we'll see in the Gurdjieffian work. But here it is posted in such a remarkable manner. So we're going to hold in our mind what we learned two chapters ago, called The Machine as an Electrical Field. And now there's this mysterious concept, the essential self as an electrical field. Two different electrical fields.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Clear and distinct. Two different. So let's get into it and let's see what it means. This short chapter, thank goodness it's short because it's so packed. It's a very, very thick meal that we have here before us. I'm going to read a few paragraphs, and then and if there's questions from folks on the phone or online, and I very much welcome that. So here we go. Just reading along. In our beginning work with the machine as an electrical field, we will work on the dissipation of distortions which have impacted themselves in and around muscles, and that refers to chapter 11, also repair the machine. Later on, we will disarm the data processor in the machine itself, after which we will address the thalamus, which is the primary source for habits. We will work to clear up the machine's organic tendencies and fixations. And we've discussed as we've gone along through the earlier chapters, observing the machine and whatnot, that the machine is loaded with mechanical tendencies, habits. Where did we learn those? We talked about that a bit last week. We learned them from our friends, our parents, our relatives. How do we survive in the world? Survive in the world. It's going to be very important. We will then turn our attention to the second level, addressing now, we are, the electrical field of the essential self. At this point, we use the most sensitive settings on the meter. And here we're talking to the regarding the galvanic skin response meter that in chapter 11 we talked about, working with the meter to find areas of electrical infirmities, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
and so that we can work with those and clear those. Why do we clear them? Because it opens up and it frees up the energy, the electrical energy that we have to work with here. So we're working with the most sensitive settings on the meter so we can read extremely minute electrical effects and phenomena which have been exposed by the removal of the dominant electrical activity of the machine. Okay, the dominant electrical activity of the machine. We will discuss more about this later in relation to the machine's tendency to impose its own will when in the sleeping state. And now, I'd like to pause on the next phrase, and its total lack of will in the waking state. Now, we talked about this in a simplistic manner. What is the sleeping state and what is the waking state? Take a shot at it? M.A.?
Mm-hmm. I think I'll pass. Let's somebody online.
Anybody else want to
say anything about that?
Make a comment on just a simple description of the difference between the two. When is the sleep machine asleep, and what does it mean then it is in the waking state? How do we get to that point? And we talked about that in some of the earlier chapters. We use our attention and we place our attention on the machine. We place the attention on the machine, and it starts to wake up.
That's right. That's what it does.
And that's what it does. And now we remember that. And so we recall that that's the situation when we're more in the waking state. Right?
Right.
Funny, isn't it? There's a form and a sensitivity of knowledge that's available only when the machine is in the waking state. Not the essential self is in the waking state. The machine is in the waking state. And now the author gives us a hint. E.J. Gold says, it's total lack of will in the waking state. So the will of the machine is down. And it's down, so it's like the coast is clear in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The coast is clear. It's not forcing its will on the situation. During which, when it isn't, therefore the lack of will is there, during which the relatively weak will of the essential self becomes active in the sense that it is no longer buried under the dominant force of the machine's will. I challenge anyone to find this level of clarity in the mechanics of working on transformation of the essential self and the interplay between the machine and that essential self is so clear. We have to unpack it a little bit to understand what it means for us. But there's a clarity here that is staggering. It's really something. So now we have placed our attention on the machine. The machine is generally in this sleeping state, by which one of the characteristics we talked about is that it's externally motivated, and it makes sense that it is because it's trying to protect itself, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to protect itself, and it's worried about its own existence and things like that. Of course, it's then in the sleeping state,
mm-hmm.
and it looks to the outside. How should I be? What do I need to do to protect myself, to survive, things like that. So now we're in a different situation. And by placing our attention on the machine, our inner attention on that machine, we can see there's a possibility it starts to awaken. So when it awakens, the main thing that happens is its will is down.
Of the machine.
Of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the very, very weak but true will of the essential self is able to look around.
Mm.
And here's an interesting thing. All of us have experienced this. All of us know what I'm talking about. The difference is that in this book, the author is giving us a way of labeling and therefore, in a sense, knowing what's actually going on. And so when he does that, it's empowering us in our knowledge. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. These words are so powerful and,
potent.
Like you said, so clarifying that we can't help but get something from them.
We do.
David, we did have a question online. It's from Sandra. Is this will being down related to the pacification of the human biological machine? And Silverdale said, I think so.
Yeah. So, can you repeat her question again? Is this will what?
Is this will being down related to the pacification of the human biological machine, HBM?
Absolutely. And the answer is yes. So, we take our inner attention, the special attention from inside. We don't need to define that right now. We don't need all the theory, but we do need the mechanism. And when we place the attention right now, sitting where you are, place yourself in a comfortable sitting position. Just like that. That's good. A position that you could sit in if you needed to sit there forever. Put yourself there for a moment. Okay. Now take your attention and place your attention on your forehead. Gently, very gently. And then move it across the top of the forehead very gently. And come back a little lower. Kind of sweep across your forehead. Now bring the attention to your right eye. Just the muscles around the right eye. At the same time, notice what's occurring. Notice what's occurring. Bring your attention now to the left eye. Gently just touch it with your attention. Excellent. Hold that attention there for a moment. Attempt to hold it. Really hold it there while I speak, so my voice is secondary to your attention on it, on your machine, and this part of the facial mask as it starts to relax. And you'll notice how active is the will and the ego of the machine right now. It's quiet. It's quiet. So when it's in pacified by this remarkable technique, something else is possible. What's possible is the essential self is what now is there and can start looking around. Okay? Good question, Sandra.
And Silverdale made one more comment. He said, over time, the essential self can become more dominant than the HBM. At this point, it is the center of gravity of all the manifestations of the HBM.
So this is where we're headed. And let's see how we get there as we go through the next couple of paragraphs. Now I'm on paragraph 4 of this chapter and continuing to read. And seemingly, out of nowhere comes this comment. Our ability to survive in the fourth dimension will be determined by our familiarity with it. In a zero-gravity simulator, we would experience the conditions of orbital or deep space flight. I don't know how does this relate? Anybody? Help me out.
I listened to a fellow the other night that said that we're headed for the fourth dimension right now in 2012. That's what he believes that we're going into. So I thought it was funny that I just heard that the other night, and then we're talking about going into the fourth dimension. He said he was saying that that evolutionary in evolutionary ways, that's where we're headed. So I don't know if that's true. You know, I have no idea what that really means, but it does change the human biological machine. And we wouldn't be able to, according to him, we would have to transform in order to survive the next place that we're headed to.
So we may not know what this means. Mm-hmm. The ability to survive in the fourth dimension will be determined by our familiarity with it. But let's keep it in mind.
Mm.
Okay?
It's interesting.
Just
it's,
hold
it's
it there.
A lot of fun.
Hold it there. We can do that. We can hold stuff there without having the ego mind say, oh, yeah, I know what it means, or I can't go on until it's fully defined for me. Just hold it there. Place it aside. Hang out in unknowing for a moment.
I also heard him later on say that we're actually, that scientists are proving that there's 12, that they're into the 12th dimension now.
No so. Question about this multidimensional.
Multidimensional.
In the waking state, we will effectively reproduce the experience of higher dimensions. We will learn what we need to do to work and to survive in the higher dimensions. And in a certain way, the portal for that is the active essential self. The portal for that is the active essential self. How do we get to the essential self? When we place our attention,
placing our attention
on the sleeping machine, it starts to awaken, and its dominance is placated. And therefore, the essential self can come to bear a little bit. Now, the next paragraph here is critical. The essential self is an electrical field, and the machine generates an electrical field, which impinges on the essential self electrical field. So we have two electrical fields here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to discern the fact that they are distinct and separate. They're two electrical fields. And if the machine is in the sleeping state dominating existence, it's too powerful at this level of our work, the essential self, to come about. So if you have two electrical fields and one's more powerful, what's going to happen? The more powerful one dominates.
Mm-hmm.
Very pragmatic. It's simple. But how do you placate that dominant field?
Placing the attention.
Placing the attention. Gosh, this is too boring. It's so too simple for the human mind. Okay.
That's all we have to do.
Unfortunately, for the ego, that's all we have to do, but we have to do it over and over and over. We must practice a lot and make it a different habit in our lives. And that's going to be revealed to us, the effect of it, on the next paragraph. The next paragraph, the crystallized electrical field of the being, or essential self, replaces the machine as a body of matter. The machine as matter is replaced by the steady state electrical magnetic image of itself. The crystallized electric field becomes a reflection of its own reflection. Mike, can you read Silverdale's comment again, please?
Okay, there's several of them from Silverdale. There's several of them here from...
Okay.
So he said, over time, the essential self can become more dominant than the human biological machine. At this point, it becomes the center of gravity. At this point, it is the center of gravity of all manifestations of the machine. And then he said, the essential self perceives itself as a vibratory sensation of white light and infinite extension. This is the fourth dimension of the essential self, which the HBM can gradually be introduced to. And then one more thing he said, that is, the gross materiality of the HBM dominates the essential self unless special efforts are made to reverse the situation. And that is the practical work on ourselves.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Mike. That was really good. Thank you. Because that is a special effort. Why is it? What makes it special? We're not trained anywhere to do this. What we're talking about now should start in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, this discussion... We should be having that at that age. So it becomes second nature. We perceive ourselves as we walk through the world, in a sense. So the crystallized electrical field of the being, that means there's a new leader in town, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the gross manifestations of the human biological machine being our guide throughout life, suddenly it comes from a different place. And the essential self is what is connected to the fourth dimension and allows us to see in that manner as we read ahead. If the machine is functioning as a transformational apparatus, then the machine as an electrical field should eventually take the form of what the essential self will someday become, at least in the electrical sense. To continue, what can the essential self learn from the machine? Nothing in the intellectual sense. And we must realize that learning in the electrical sense, which is called understanding in our tradition, means something quite different from what is ordinarily understood by the word learning. Information in the evolutionary sense is transmitted by impingement of one electrical field upon another. The electrical field of the essential self undergoes change, which we call transformation. And this next few paragraphs, sentences, and phrases are important. By which we mean the exact changes necessary to free it, the essential self, from its electrical affinity for the human biological machine, within which it takes its current involuntary residence as a result of learning from the electrical field of the machine. So what we have is the essential self is like a child that's never gone out into the world. It's only known one other electrical field, and that electrical field is the human biological machine. And what is the human biological machine normally? Asleep. So if we place our attention on it, something different is possible. Something different is possible. And we can know at that time that we can see in a different manner. That is, it learns from the machine's electrical field if the machine is not in the sleeping state and the field is not damaged or distorted. So only in the waking state. We know how to get there. We've all experienced it. We've all done it. There's not a mystery to it. There's only effort. And this is the effort that we can do. And if we do this effort in all phases of our life, not just here on Wednesday nights when you happen to come read a book or something like that, but tomorrow at work, or when you go see your mother tomorrow, or your best friend and you guys have a really good time, pay attention. Pay attention in this unique manner. After a while, something different occurs. And I don't know if I just forepaws on, you know, so some people and Path World, Sama, some individuals have been working in unusual circumstances, and they're suddenly noticing, like, the essential self is, like, popping out when they don't expect it. Like, suddenly it's there. So that, and that's because they've done enough work where it's starting to show up. So the dominance of the two electrical fields changes.
Silverdale made a comment related to that. He says, this is what is meant by being born again, namely the essential self gestates within the HBM until it can be birthed. That is, the essential self can have a life independent of the HBM. And one more here. He says, the essential self moves from an involuntary state within the HBM to a voluntary state within or without the HBM. That is, interpenetrating it, but not limited to it, I guess.
And not limited to it, because it's not limited by the dominant electrical field of the habitual, historical HBM. Suddenly, it's new. Everybody that's online right now, everybody, in fact, virtually everybody I've ever talked to has had these aha moments where something is suddenly very clear, very different. And you go, oh, yes. And you don't know how you got there. You're just there. So we know that there's moments of freedom. And those are true moments of freedom. And that's what I wrote down in my book. My book's all written up here. And busted up, by the way. But this is what we start to mean by freedom at that time. In addition, another factor is necessary. If the machine is to function as a teacher of the essential self, imposing its functions upon that of the essential self. So now we're saying, can we make the machine something new and different? The answer is yes, we can. And the machine is a powerful electrical force. So how can we bring it to start serving the electrical self? We waken it. And I think I shared a few weeks ago that I had this unusual experience. I was, I don't know if I'd call it meditating, but I was meditating. I was just sitting down to be quiet in this particular space where it's safe to do so.
You were sitting, not laying down or anything.
I was sitting. I was sitting, and I was placing my attention, as it were, I was brushing my attention over the machine over and over again. And in a certain moment, it was as if the machine burst open, and I felt it was looking at me. I felt it turned and looked at me, in a sense, ready to serve. It was the strangest feeling. I had never had that before. And it suddenly I understand the potency of the idea of the transformational apparatus that the machine can be. It's something that can transform and empower the essential self. And it empowers it when its will is placated. It's not the dominant force. It's there to serve us. There to serve the essential self.
Mm-hmm.
And it can empower it.
To teach the essential self.
And then it can do something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And then it can be a teacher. Energetically, certainly it can. There's no question about it. But wait a minute. How do we get to the awakened machine again? I forgot.
Something to do with attention, I think it was.
I see. I just asking.
I wanted to go back to one paragraph that you read earlier, way earlier, where you talked about the crystallized electrical field of the being
this
replaces
huge.
The machine as the body of matter. And I was wondering, are we saying that the crystallization, how do we get it crystallized?
Okay, well, let's just look at the words. Let's just unpack the words. What does it mean for something to be crystallized?
First
thing comes off your brain.
Set.
It's set,
yeah.
Right? It's
mm-hmm.
just like that's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
So what would it mean for the crystallized electrical field of the being?
Yeah, and I always thought that it was already crystallized, so I didn't realize that. So I'm thinking that it's saying that we have to, each time that we put our attention on it, we get a little bit more crystallized.
We put our attention on the machine.
Mm-hmm. Put our attention on the machine and allow
it. Allows the electrical self to come forth. Because it's think of it this way, is that we're, the essential self is a child. It's never even seen the ocean. And when we place our attention on the machine and the machine quiets down, it can look around. It can see. Now, what it's seeing is the fourth dimension, but we don't need to talk about that. It's just seeing now. But what if we're able to practice this attention exercise every time we're in any environment that we are? The essential self, instead of being focused only on the machine, on the electrical field of the machine. We're talking about two electrical fields, all right? And from birth, that's all it sees. All it sees is the sleeping machine, this dominant. It kind of wakes up, it looks around, and it goes, oh, there's the brightest thing I can see. And the machine is just doing whatever it does. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if we gradually work on this in this way, so it starts to be awakened in a certain way, the essential self can become stronger.
Stronger, okay.
And stronger, mm-hmm. and stronger, until it doesn't need to just stare at the machine. It can open its eyes. And you've seen, and we've seen, and we've heard, so those who have eyes to see,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we're talking about. When we're in the awakened, when the essential self is becoming the crystallized electrical field, then something is different. Okay?
Angio made a comment about that. He said a crystallized electrical being is one that can no longer be distracted by the phenomenal world.
Exactly. And so now the dominance of the two interacting electrical fields, not opposed,
mm-hmm.
interacting.
One is impinging on the other.
As we go through life in the normal way, the sleeping machine is just powerful. The essential self doesn't even consider anything but looking at it. But when the electrical field of the machine is placated and quiet, suddenly the essential self can come about. And if we do that enough, we have a different guide. Our guide is truly different at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to the point of a crystallized electrical field, as Pyongyo is telling us, that's who the guide is at that time. We're not dominated by the world. We're in the world, but we're now, at that point, not of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So we understand these esoteric phraseologies now. In the world, but not of it. If I'm in the world and in the world and of the world, then it means I'm in the machine and dominated by the machine.
Dominated by the machine. Mm-hmm.
But if I'm in the awakened essential self and it's the more dominant electrical field, then I'm in the world, but I'm not of it. I'm of a different, I'm birthed anew. And we can understand what many of us in this society, in, you know, the United States or whatnot, Western European nations, are Christian. You know, and what do they call? You know, I'm reborn.
Born again.
I'm born again. And in truth, that is, there's a lot to that. Born again in the Christ nature. And if we look at the Kabbalah, we can see that the Tipperef, that's the Christ center. And that's the middle pillar, and that's where we wind up. We can start to see the great unity that we are part of. By definition, in a sense, the machine separated in its own soul lonely unit.
Mm-hmm.
But when we're in the essential self, we're part of the being of nature here. So we're reborn,
yeah,
you're right.
We're reborn. Yeah.
David, speaking of the middle pillar there, Silverdale made a comment, and he was elaborating on Piaget's comment. Silverdale said that the crystallization where you're free of the world, this is one level of achievement, but then you move on to combinations between the HBM and the essential self. So I was thinking that that's like this middle pillar integrating,
yes,
the two, or manifesting some kind of integration of the two. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
No, but that's, think, consider that. Keep with that, Mike, and hold that. That then they become integrated. And as we go on briefly here, this is paragraph 13 on page 103. Even though the machine wishes in a way to fulfill its function as a transformational apparatus, wishes to fulfill its function. It knows that that's what it's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that all living organisms wish to fulfill the genuine objective, the machine also has developed a powerful defense mechanism against the waking state. We will discuss that at length later. Chapter 19 is when we hit that. So why would the machine, Let me ask you this, M.A. Why would the machine not want to wake up? We know that its function is to have, be a transformation. Why wouldn't it want to wake up?
Well,
anybody
might be fearful.
Fearful? What would it be afraid of?
Being disconnected. Says it might be disconnected. And yes, that's pretty heavy.
What did the machine learn in its lifetime? It learned to survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does it survive? It just wants to know, are you going to eat me? Can I eat you? Are you gonna, you know, it basically walks around life, and that's the fundamental question.
Uh-huh.
That's all. And so if it suddenly is not looking out there to see if you're going to overpower me, it's fearful of its survival.
Mm-hmm.
And we have built a great number of tools to help us survive. We've built so many tools to help us survive this fearfulness, but now we don't need them anymore. We don't need them anymore. But the habit and the power of those habits is so great.
Four Paul's commented that one of the reasons the machine doesn't want to give up is because of doesn't want to give up control. And then Sandra said, it wants to break up into its separate parts and free itself from all the other units it is imprisoned with as a body. And she says, this I got from EJ's early writings. And Silverdale says, the HBM is like a donkey. It acts according to its innate nature alone, which does not include evolutionary transformation. And then Sandra says, the essential self is an immortal being and has no interest in death. Okay.
Yeah, and so we have these two different true viewpoints. Two different viewpoints that we're walking around in this envelope that we selected. Okay.
One looking at a mortal side and one looking at an immortal side. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, the immortal, it's a non-issue. Mortality is a non-issue. It's looking at the beingness and the absolute creation. It's connected to creation, the very heart of it. From the absolute comes forth our existence. We then suddenly, because we awaken as an essential self and start to become the crystallized essential self, we have a chance to get back and to give back. This last paragraph on 103, paragraph 14 of this chapter.
69.
Page 69, the old version. The greater the similarity of the electrical field of the machine to that of the essential self, the greater possibility for the principle of contagion to alter the electrical field of the essential self. What does that mean? Notice right now the wonder that you're held in. The moments of wonder, the machine is quiet, and the essential self is looking around. That's what's happening. Value those moments of wonder. Value them. See what they're like. Sense it.
This may not be a good metaphor, David, but the similarity of the electrical field of the machine and of the essential self, I seem to remember about stroking the needle with a magnet, the needle lines up its electrical field with the magnet, and then, of course, it comes under the influence of the electrical field of the earth, so to speak. So you got that, you've got some similarity of the two fields there.
That's precisely, and in so, so clear and simple. It's once again too simple for the human mind. It's only the path is made simple here. And we'll see that actually in the next couple of paragraphs. So that's exactly the right similarity. That's a simile. It's perfect. So how do we get there? How do we even get the essential self to even approach the concept of being crystallized? And the greater the similarity of the electrical field of the machine, how does this happen?
Those words that you read, the principle of contagion.
The principle of contagion. What I want to say, and what's important for me about this chapter and that I wanted to express to everyone, we know this already. We actually have stumbled on this over and over again. And what I want to express here is that our effort is to pay attention to it, to notice the fact that the machine is an electrical field, to sense the difference of the essential self. Once you name it, it starts to have more power. Once you name it and hold it, and then it's part of you in a different way. It strengthens. But if you never notice it or name it, how could it be?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. That's a good way of thinking about it.
So now we know, as we walk through the day, we notice that we're an electrical field. And if we notice that that electrical field is subject to contagion, think of that electrically. We know what it means. Can you sense the electrical field in this space?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, she says.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? All I'm saying is, we all know that. We all say, yeah, of course I can feel that. And what I want to say is, okay, continue to pay attention to that in that manner. And that which we've always kind of noticed, put it on the front burner. Put it on the front burner. That's our job. That's our work, okay? I'm going to jump ahead a few paragraphs. It's a short but potent chapter. We may experience a situation in which the machine's electrical blockages are temporarily removed by artificial means, drugs, hypnosis, some sort of shock, and the machine functions momentarily as it should. Now listen. A pure, vital, living electrical apparatus. Isn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
I was years and years ago, and this was actually a time before I had gray hair, and this is decades, okay, maybe longer than that.
A while back.
I was in a group in Los Angeles called the Spinoza Gurdjieff Group, led by a guy named Gregory Grover. And this guy was wonderful, a wonderful teacher. And years and years earlier than that, the Spinoza Foundation out of New York and Cleveland had discovered, this was in the 40s, the work of Gurdjieff, and they saw that there's a lot of similarities. Anyway, Gregory Grover and I was working on a friendship with this other fellow in the group. His name was Wendell. And if you had particular work, you know, objects you were working on that way, he'd meet with you. And what he would do is we'd come to his apartment, and then he'd do a thing called, now we're going to go into silence. And you could feel him emanating a particular energy, and the only way to be in that energy was to be in the essential self.
Mm.
That's all that was available then. We all know that, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
We all know what I'm talking about, don't we? So we go into this deep silence, and we're there for a while. I had a very difficult time coming out. When I came out, I declared that what I realized, that my job, what I had found out about my work, was that I wanted to cleanse this vessel, cleanse the vessel to be of service, to allow something to come through. It was long before I had any of this technology. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you were that's interesting that you were thinking cleansing, because I think that we go there a lot. You know, we have to get rid of. But I think what we're saying here is we're impinging one field on the other field, so we're not really getting rid of. I think that that's a kind of a different
what I learned
way,
since then,
way of thinking
I wanted to reorient. Instead of the machine being the dominant force, I wanted the essential self to be the crystallized leader of this pack.
Mm-hmm.
Leader of the pack.
Leader of the pack.
Okay.
But don't you think that schools, a lot of ways of thinking, you know, we just kind of grow up with this idea. It's either we keep it or we get rid of it. Get rid of. We're always trying to get rid of things. And a lot of, it seems to me, a lot of readings kind of lead you to the idea that maybe we always have to get rid of things rather than working with them.
With the reorient.
Transformational.
Instead, we have to reorient, right. The idea of getting rid of is like, I'm sinning. It's a sin. I'm guilty, so
mm-hmm.
on and so forth. This is a different orientation. Once you reorient and the leader is the essential self, that's what you're trying to do. So when you look at an internal electrical anomaly, what you're not trying to do is get rid of it. You're just trying to reorient. And that's what I've learned since then. I want to quickly go toward the end of the chapter because we're kind of getting close on time. Accidentally or intentionally perceiving another dimension, crossing a barrier to another dimension, we might notice the loss of significance and meaning. We've all been there. The lack of logical coherence, and yet at the same time, we might suddenly experience the deep interconnectedness of everything, being a subject and object as much as of oneself. Perceiving in more than one dimension at a time is very unusual. It is more usual to perceive in one dimension and then return to another. Ordinary perception is single-dimensional. But a normally functioning human being should have the ability to perceive and function in several dimensions at the same time. This is an important exercise that can only be done from the vista of the essential self. When you're in that place, if you are in that place and you walk into a space, you see many things. You know, we go to a local health food store and go shop or something like that. And when I endeavor to be in that place, when I walk in there, which I do, because I use it as a reminding factor,
mm-hmm.
I look around and I see certain people who are more in their essential self than others. Why? There's nothing unusual about it. I'm just perceiving from a different point of view. And we can all do that.
Good terminology, reminding factors.
Yeah, we have to find inner reminding factors.
Mm-hmm.
However, even if we can't perceive multidimensionally all the time, we can have our radar on to suddenly notice something and snap around and see it. The radar, keeping the radar alive is important. Perceiving in single dimensions produces the illusion of separation. But if we are able to function as a multidimensional being, then we will view ourselves and our surroundings as miniature electrical fields, anomalies within one giant electrical field. and eventually the electrical field of the essential self will stabilize itself in this transformed state. And that's what we mean by being crystallized.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now,
stabilize.
So it becomes.
And it says eventually. So it is a process.
So if we work and we do this and we place our attention on the sleeping machine over and over again, every single time you do that, it's like lifting the weight for the essential self at that time. And again, and again, and again. Every time you allow the essential self to exercise itself by awakening the machine, the essential self starts to become something new and different. It starts to become the center of attraction, and it attracts its partner. The human biological machine is active at that point in feeding energy to a new place, and the essential self then has the ability to trans in transformation. When we are in the waking state and we are in this fourth dimension, we can start to see a little bit about what our duty and our work might be. I've seen people say, now that I know a little bit about myself, I know that my job is hospitality. My job is service in this manner or that manner. You can't see that until the machine is placated and the essential self does become the dominant force in this partnership. At that point, we can orient in a different manner and see in a different manner. And that's our goal. So all I want to say is lift the weights a little bit every day. Every moment that you can. So thanks a lot for coming tonight.
Some real practical work to work on.
Practical work tools. And thanks for coming. I look forward to seeing you next week, Chapter 13, when I think we're supposed to get some help.
Help. Help is on the way.
Help is on the way. Go to the website, wingsofchaos.com/HBM, and leave a comment or two. Leave something for everybody else. Thanks again, and good night.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Thank you, Mike.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Very good.